This is Steve Sherlock with another internet radio show, or podcast, number 171 in the series for Franklin Matters. This recording shares the community forum hosted by the SAFE Coalition at the Franklin Senior Center on Thursday, September 19, 2019. Jennifer Knight, president of the SAFE Coalition, closes out the session with an invitation to continue the conversation, ask questions, etc. GTE Franklin LLC can be scheduled for another session. The presentation document used can be found in the show notes, so you can follow along with the audio and presentation. Without further ado, here is the audio recording, including some of the Q&A session following the presentation, approximately 1 hour and 20 minutes.
We need 1 sec to pop up. So, just like to introduce myself, my name is Chirag Patel. And I'm here, Jim Patel, with me. We are, I'm the CEO of GT Taunton, or GT Franklin LLC. We are proposing a retail marijuana shop here in Franklin at 1256 West Central Street. And as soon as the PowerPoint is on. So before we get started, I just want to give you a quick intro about myself and my background, so where I come from. So before we were introduced to any of the retail or cannabis space, I currently work and reside in Stowe in the Brockton area, where I own 2 liquor stores and I also manage a convenience store. All this started when I was younger. My family owns businesses for over 20 years now, so it's been a generational thing for me. So as soon as I graduated, I went with this with technology with the bachelor's in electromechanical engineering. I went ahead and 3 months out of college, I joined my father in his business venture. So I've been doing that for roughly 5 years, but even prior to that, I was helping my father at the convenience store when I was a teenager, so I was always actively involved into the retail space. And 5 years later, fast forward, here we are today. We're moving into another sector, into retail space, which we think is very familiar to what we've done so far. And Jemin is very similar background, where he's had over 15 years of retail experience working in small retail businesses, subway franchise, and even hotel development all over Massachusetts. So just to give you a quick introduction, so we are proposing a dispensary at 1256 West Central Street here in Franklin. And what we plan on bringing is a really high quality and consistent type of business, where we're going to be able to offer a variety of products to our consumers. We are not cultivating ourselves, and we will be purchasing product from other vendors. And we'll go over more of how that's done as we progress. But in the next slide, we can see that this is the location that we have, is right on route, right off of 495, right after Forge Parkway. You have a small building there, which is roughly around 10,000 square feet. That's our proposed location. We are within the overlay district that's been decided by the city, or the town of Franklin. So we are within the boundaries of doing the business in that zone.
Do you own the building, or are you renting?
We're gonna be renting.
Yeah, so we're gonna go over all that. So we'll take the Q&A at the end. But yes, we are purchasing the building. So our sister company, which is GT Franklin Realty LLC, is going to be purchasing the building based on contingent to obviously getting approvals and special permit through the town. So you can see the proposed location right over there. It's roughly 10,000 square feet. The space that we plan to utilize is roughly 4,000 square feet, so we're not going to be utilizing the whole building. There are going to be other tenants there that are going to either remain. 18,000 square feet, sorry, reiterate. Just to kind of go over the preliminaries of how we can exist there, we are not within any schools, which is set in the bylaws of 500 feet, so we are well beyond that buffer. This is a very industrial heavy area, so there's not too many residentials around there as much as you would have more in town. So I know that there's a notion of sort of these dispensaries creating parking issues and traffic issues, and we have created plenty of plans and mitigation effects to overcome those. One of the things that we're doing is that we're expanding the parking lot. So currently the parking lot comprises of roughly around 40 parking spaces, and we are in front of the planning board right now to seek an approval to expand the parking lot to 93 spaces. So as is right now, the building itself with all the tenants, requirement of a max peak time, which is maximum amount of cars you would see on the lot, is around 35 cars. And what we propose is 93 parking spaces, so we will have a dedicated space of roughly around 55, including our employees and our customers. And one of the things that we've always discussed with the town is a sort of like soft opening, which is our first 3 to 6 months, which we anticipate, but it's all going to be based on us getting that lifted eventually, is appointment only. So the way that would work is that we would initially start off with appointment only with a limit of 40 per hour. So, you know, there can't be more than 40 customers that can book within an hour window. And we'll have 15 minute blocks where consumers can fill in those appointments. And obviously you would have to have an appointment to show up at the facility. Without an appointment, you'd be asked to leave the premises or come back with an appointment. So over here, this is very similar in our final revised plan of what we have that's in front of the planning board in Franklin. We have the building right over here, which is the main building, and all these parkings that you see on the side, in the rear and the side, they're all extra parking that we have proposed, as well as the area to the left here. So what we plan on doing is having these spaces mostly geared towards tenants that are currently existing, and then we'll have all these spaces in the back that'll be reserved for the dispensary. Not necessarily required that they park there, but this is to ensure the smoothest flow of traffic for us. And we do have one means of egress, but there is room for two cars to go within the road here, so there will be plenty of maneuverability around the property, so there won't be people stuck necessarily. As soon as they enter, they can easily do a loop around the building. So to kind of get into the gut of this thing, we'll go over a little bit of the security. One of the first and foremost important things is the ID checking tool. So the ID checking tool that we have inside the facility is very similar to what we already kind of implement into our liquor stores today, which is a state monitored ID checking tool, which is constantly updated. So there is no sort of room for anybody to show up with a fake ID or even use somebody else's ID, because we do match your facial recognitions right on, because they're gonna be having to present it to a security guard as soon as they enter. So the ID is actually checked twice in the facility, not just once. So once, as soon as you enter the building, it's checked, and that's how you actually are able to get past the security vestibule. And I'll show you a little more in detail, because we'd have a floor plan after this. And then you have to present your ID once again at checkout before you purchase your product. So it's very important that security is very important to us, and we want to make sure that everybody who's entering the store is above the age of 21. Another thing we have is 24/7 surveillance. So even per the CCC guidelines, there is sort of two monitoring systems in this stage where, yes, we get our approvals from the planning board and the city of and the town of Franklin, and we're coordinating with the Franklin police, but we also have to abide by the CCC regulations, and one of those is 24/7 surveillance. So we don't have any room to sort of go away from that. So, you know, it's sort of enforced on us, which is a good thing. We have to have 24/7 surveillance for up to a log of 90 days that we have to keep in track, but we plan on probably keeping it for 6 months just in case. Everything on the exterior and the interior is monitored 24/7. So if there's someone out in the parking lot, we'll be able to zoom right in and see what's going on, any activity. And there will be an individual, which is the security guard or officer, that's going to be on site at all times monitoring these. Another thing that we have is an RFID entryway, which is essentially either a keypad or a ID scanning system, which allows you access to limited access areas like the employee room or the back. So there isn't much room for any individual to kind of be outside of the realm of for the consumer floor area. Everything that's behind the counter or even in the back employee rooms are all keypad or keyless entry with the ID card. So there is very tight-knit security in here. One additional thing we're also going to have in here is a storage vault. The storage vault is going to serve as where we're going to put most of our inventory. So some of the inventory procedures that we have in the facility that's going to be in our policy is that at the end of every shift, or at the end of not every shift, at the end of the night, we store all of our inventory that's out on the floor currently or anywhere behind the shelf, and we have to store it all back into the vault. So at the end of the day, everything's secured inside the vault, and the vault is going to be most likely a cement 10x10, very secure vault with like big safe almost. That's where a lot of our inventory goes, as well as all the deposits throughout the day. So everything is secured at night. Even within the extra security layer that we have, there's going to be a vault inside. So it's more or less like a bank if you were trying to imagine it. We've kind of went over the appointment only system, you know, we've been talking to the town of Franklin, and they want us to adhere to that, which we will. And eventually, when we get this company launched, you know, it's also good to know that even though we are proposing appointment only, but by the time we're up and operational, it's good to know that there's going to be at least another 150 to 200 dispensaries all across Massachusetts. Right now, currently, we have 24 dispensaries. So you can just imagine that people will have other ways to shop or shop closer to some of the dispensaries that's closer to them as opposed to coming further along. So I think that the traffic and appointment only will be eventually lifted because just exactly what I said is that there's gonna be many more dispensaries out there and people won't have to congregate at one place to get the products they need. And one of the most important things to note here is that there is no on-site consumption. And you know, we do have another page under which we'll kind of dig into, but you know, with the 24/7 surveillance with the security officer on site, we will make our best effort to make sure there's on-site consumption. There will be those who will try or make an effort to do so, but we will have the tools necessary to prevent that. One quick thing to note as well is that we've already spoken to Chief Lynch over the over by Franklin Police Department. We've already sat down for a good hour or two, reviewed of our security plan, our security blueprints that we have, as well as our policies and procedures, and we've came to terms, and he's happy with everything that we've shown him so far. And you know, I think we're gonna be more in talks as soon as we're getting the company launched or open. I think that's where he's gonna be more involved in, but right now, he's content with whatever we have right now.
And then even with the 24/7 surveillance, that the police department also has access to it, so they can log in at any time that they want. So there's gonna be access at the state level, the town level, and then even we would have access. So multiple people have access to it.
Correct, so if the request is made, we're allowed to give access to our surveillance, or they're able to go onto the feed. This, I couldn't really put it this way. I had to put it a little sideways for everybody to be able to see, but this is sort of the floor area blueprint that we have. And so the way it works is that I was talking earlier, as soon as you enter, which is the entrance right over here, you're sort of stuck in this vestibule where you have to present your ID to the security officer that's gonna be most likely stationed right over there. And you know, that goes to the ID checking tool. Once you are given the authority to go in, you'll be escorted into the waiting room. Just ignore that door. There's been some edits made after this. But you're escorted into the waiting room. The waiting room is sort of what we like to call like an informational / educational room. We will, our goal as a company is not to strive and just sell products. We also want to be able to educate everybody and make sure that everybody's aware of what's going on, what these products are, what are the effects, what are some of the pros and cons about it. And we would like to keep most of the educational room while they're waiting. I think it's a good thing where they're able to look at brochures. And so once you're in the waiting room, they're not allowed to come inside the dispensary until there is a bud tender that's free to be able to go into a one-on-one consultation with them. So when that bud tender is free, they simply call the person that's up in line next, and then they're able to enter the floor area right over here, which you see. And this is gonna comprise of mostly displays and you know, products, but all the product itself is actually stored behind the counter. So there's no open product outside. There's no sort of picking and choosing what you want. You have to know what you want and ask for it once you get at the counter at the checkout. This is the employee room only. As you can see, there is two means of egress, which is, once again, has the RFID entryway system in there, so nobody can really access these, even if they were to get beyond this barrier here. We have an indoor vault, there's a stock room, and a delivery area, which is an egress from the back. So this is sort of the gist of what we have proposed. There can be revisions made to this, but this sort of gives you an overall idea of what steps it takes for someone to enter inside the facility. It's not just a place where you enter and you're kind of in, you know, inside the store. You have to go through two rooms before you even enter the actual retail space area. So some of the diversion preventions that we are going to be implementing to make sure that all the product remains in the right hands is we're going to implement a C2CL tracking system. So the C2CL tracking system was actually introduced by the CCC, which is the Controlled Cannabis Commission. And the way it works is that they have a software which is called Metric. And this Metric software actually is implemented to every retail store, cultivation, manufacturer, anywhere where this product is able to go. It's tracked. So from the start that it starts to actually grow in its vegetation state, it's given a unique ID code. And from that point, it stays with that until it's actually trimmed and packaged. And then that same ID code is then divided into those packages, so you know exactly how much product the plants produce. And where those products go is actually tracked as well. So during the delivery, the manifest has exactly where the product came from, where it was tested, and where it's going en route. And even when it's sold inside the store, there's inventory tracking. So we've gotten 10 products, we've sold 9 products, we're left with one. The CCC knows that, and we're able to report it properly. So not only the C2CL tracking, but there are monthly audits inside the dispensary. So every month there is a random check where somebody comes in and is able to pull up our inventory logs, be able to make sure that all the product is going to the right place. If we do have any wastage, that has to be reported as well. And I didn't go over that, but there is going to be, if there's any waste associated with cannabis that's kept indoors and in a locked bin that's inside the facility itself, so there is no product that's even sitting outside of the trash if there was any waste, and all of that product is actually either called ahead or scheduled on a timely basis for somebody to pick up, and we hand give it to the actual garbage disposal that's coming to pick it up. Some of the transportation documents. One of the concerns that everybody has is how is this stuff transported? It's not transported in any sort of advertisement vehicles. It's usually an unmarked vehicle which has a GPS tracking system on the distributor's end, not our end, but they have more of a control over where this vehicle is going, where it's at all times. They're not allowed to make any random stops. And there's two personnel inside the vehicle at all times. One person is obviously the driver, and the other person is one that actually is only allowed to get out of the vehicle to make the delivery. So on the distributor's end, they will have two personnel. On our end, we will have 2 or 3 employees of our own, and during the morning shift or evening shift, when we get these deliveries, where they'll be able to escort the inventory right into the storage vault. One good thing to know is that we don't have any specific delivery routes or delivery dates or delivery times. Everything's sporadic. It's all up to the distributor and our end to kind of coordinate those. And we would be doing these mostly off hours, and we have a secured area enough in the back where a van will be able to pull in without too much public notice. Photo identification. Obviously, when somebody comes in, we're all concerned about this product getting into the wrong hands, or somebody that's abusing the system by maybe purchasing for somebody or whatever the case is. So in order to do that, we don't know the exact details of exactly how it's going to play out, but an overall view of things is every person that comes in is on camera 24/7. Every consumer that comes in throughout the day has your ID checked in with us. So if there is some sort of diversion that happened, we'll be able to track it, or at least help track it to the best of our ability with the security features that we have. So everybody that comes in is on camera. There's no necessarily hiding your face or sort of not being on camera when you enter. Another thing that we have is exit packaging. So a lot of these products, after they're bought, they're putting into, they usually put into like a brown or a white brown bag that's exited the facility, stapled. So if there's any tampering with the products, we would know that if there were, if somebody said that we saw them consuming on site and they said they didn't, well, we'll be able to know because they tampered with the actual bag, because they're not allowed to open it on site as well. And some of the other extra precautions that we have is, this mostly comes from the manufacturer side, is that most of these products, if they are sort of boxes or some sort of edible, they will come in childproof and tamper-resistant bags. So it wouldn't be necessarily just something you can open right away. There's a special technique to open these bags, which mostly an adult would know how to do. So some of the opportunities that we're going to bring to Franklin as operating a company in Franklin is jobs. So one of our sort of features that we have when we're submitting to the CCC is that we sort of have to give them sort of goals and measurement tools of what we plan on doing in Franklin. And one of those goals that we've set for ourselves is that we're probably going to have anywhere from 15 to 25 full-time to part-time employees here. And we want to make it a goal by year three, year four, to be able to have at least 50% of our employment force to be from Franklin. And that's our way of ensuring that, you know, we are trying to keep this as local as possible. And, you know, we're not just this big company that's going to hire some corporate structure or corporate people that are come in and you probably won't know them all. It'll probably be a friendly neighborhood that you probably know that's working at the dispensary eventually. Some of the other things that we're going to be doing is monetary benefits. We all know about sort of the impact fees that are associated with this, and if we don't know, those are $300,000 every year. It's going to be an impact fee that we're going to be paying to the town of Franklin. That's a flat fee. That's non-negotiable. That's something that we negotiated with the town administrator Jamie Helen, and we came to an agreement with that number. And in addition to that, there's a 3% sales tax, which also the town of Franklin will benefit on. So on every sale or purchase that a consumer makes out of us, there's gonna be a 3% that goes straight to town of Franklin. Some of the taxes, our goal of coming into Franklin is not a short-term goal. We're not here just for the sakes of cannabis. We wanna make a long-term establishment in Franklin. We're here to purchase a property. We're going to be good landlord owners. We have tenants there. So we're not just making a contribution by being your business here. We're actually making an investment into Franklin itself. Some of the positive impact, and that's actually quite funny because that's how we got to know Jen over here. We've come up with a positive impact plan that sort of incorporates our envision of how we plan on tackling some of the major awareness that's going around, not just cannabis, but just opioids in general. And we're going to be able to do that by most likely teaming up with SAFE and hopefully even getting some educational pieces for them because, you know, as we said, our goal as a company is to create a positive vibe for the community, not just to hear exist as a business. So some of the things that we're going to be doing is that we're going to be holding monthly seminars, maybe once a month. It could be twice depending on what type of feedback we get from the community, where we'll have 1 hour window blocked out from the dispensary where it's closed and it's only an information session. Where people are able to come in, they'll be able to ask any questions, know about the products, find out what there is going on in the community, if there's any questions, concerns, how we can address them, how we can help them. And that's gonna be our main goal as a positive impact. And to go even a little above that, outside of the realm of just the dispensary, we're gonna be hopefully trying to volunteer some hours. So some of our staff members that are experienced with the product, they'll be able to go out and actually advocate or help people, train people who want to get involved in this industry. So we're not just out there to create or help people, those who we are in business with, but we want to be able to help those individuals that are not in the industry right now. Maybe they need some help training to be able to maybe get hired at our place or some other place. So those are some of the positive impacts that we think that are going to be beneficial to Franklin. So we've heard about sort of the company itself. We wanted to go over a little bit of what it's like to apply to the state itself. So the state has three packet system, which is exactly how we apply. And the first one is application and intent. So the application and intent usually entails where we are, what are we doing, what's our company, our background, from the company, who's involved in the company. So there is a big vetting system that goes on in the CCC that maybe that doesn't happen more so with the town, where they check everything on us. They wanna know how many years we've been in business. They wanna make sure that everything's been caught up and paid for in terms of taxes. So they're doing a lot of the vetting. A management operation profile, I touched on a few subjects now, but there are over 15 to 16 categories in which we have to implement policies or procedures that we have to get to the state. That includes dispensing procedures, how we're gonna store these items, and they're very detailed descriptions of how we're gonna do these on a day-to-day basis. And they vet that before they give us a license. Another thing is background check package. this background check package not only does a background check on us as the owners, but anybody that's working there. So anybody that's going to be working in the dispensary has to have a, or they have to go through the CCC to get a background check done, which gives them the ability to work in a dispensary as a registered agent. So everybody that's going to be in and around this facility has been cleared and you know, are essentially good to go. In terms of the host community agreement, we are in the planning board right now in front of them. So we already have an executed HCA with the town of Franklin. And so I think I've covered a lot here. I know a lot of you have questions. So I think that's the end for me. And I'm here to listen to everybody who has questions.
The road out in front of your place.
I'm sorry?
The road that's out in front of your place.
Correct.
That is a mess now.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, small.
Right.
Are you doing anything with that or anything like that?
So in terms of the actual road itself, it actually belongs to MassDOT, the state highway. So we don't have any jurisdiction to be able to make any sort of changes to that.
Yeah.
But, you know, the road sort of exists as it exists, and we are trying to sort of work around that because that's something that we won't be able to do. But with some of the traffic mitigation plans that we have, I think we can help manage that. But something on that road, it is, you know, it is what it is, right? Yeah.
Has the independent traffic study been completed?
Yes. Correct. Yes, it has.
And when is that available to the road? Has the planning board seen it?
The planning Correct. Board, yeah. So it was done, I think, sometime last month, so it should be available.
Okay.
At the town level.
Just one correction. You mentioned there's no residential around there. Last time I looked, there's a very huge apartment complex within very short walking distance.
Correct.
Just wanted to point that.
Mm-hmm.
What, you mentioned that you're expecting 40 people an hour.
Maximum, correct.
Okay, so that means they're spending 1.5 minutes in the store.
I'm sorry?
They're spending 1.5 minutes in the store.
No, so it doesn't work based on calculation of how many or how much time they spend. I mean, the dispensary itself, we're gonna have 6 POS stations. So like, you know, at once we'll be able to handle roughly up to 10 to 15 consumers depending on how long they take. But on average, any consumer that enters a dispensary like this, they spend anywhere from 5 to 10 minutes picking their product. Because, you know, there isn't too much to pick from. A lot of them kind of know what they want. And the ones that sort of linger and kind of figure out what they want, they tend to take it longer. But, you know, in general, it's not one point, like, we're not taking one customer at a time. We're able to fit in many at once.
So when you set your appointments,
Correct.
What are the intervals of your appointments?
It'll be 15 minutes.
15 minute intervals. So, right. So like essentially we want 10 customers every 15 minutes to be at the store at one time maximum. And we're not sort of constraining them to any time frame or anything. That's why we have sort of what you saw earlier. We have a security checkpoint and then there's a waiting room after that. So in the event that one or two customers take a little longer, it usually evens out because maybe the next two customers won't take as long and it kind of gets the flow.
But that kind of conflicts with your comment, the 40 an hour. If you're saying that each customer you're going to spend 10 to 15 minutes and you expect 40 mm-hmm. in an hour, that doesn't make any, you know.
So if we have six people who can bring each person up, like each employee can handle up to 6 to 12 customers per hour. So we're gonna have 6 of those. So if you multiply that out, you can roughly take at a minimum 36 to 72 an hour as a capacity.
Okay, so if you've got 72 an hour, but we don't have ample parking places to put them, even right. with the additional parking.
So that's the right. thing, we're going to have the capacity, but we're only going to allow 40 through the door.
Right, and it's...
But that's only for the first, you said, how many months?
Yeah,
3 or 6 months.
Correct.
That's so what we're estimating. Right now...
I know.
Yeah.
So like the way we have it is that if 75% of the appointments do get booked up, then we're not gonna lift the appointments. But if we start booking less than 75% of the appointments, that's the only time we're gonna lift the appointments.
So why wouldn't you stay with appointments for a year, 2 years?
Well, we can, but...
Well, you can, but that's not what you're saying, and that's not what would be in your proposal.
Right. So, like, let's just say another two open up in Franklin, and we're the only ones that have appointment, and they don't. We sort of lose out on the business. So that's why this is written, assuming that there's no one else who's going to open.
So how many customers do you feel you need an hour in order to make money?
Probably around 20 to 25. With the fees and the taxes you have to pay.
Mm-hmm. Close to your property is a small pond, like whatever. Mm-hmm. Are there wetlands included where you want the parking lot?
Yes.
Yep. We've been cleared by the Conservation Commission.
The question was just, are there wetlands?
Yes, there is, yep. Next to the property, correct.
Okay.
Can the planning board deny the extra parking?
That's what they have to do. It's hard for them to know that.
Who owns the land?
The seller owns the land.
The seller, okay. Mm-hmm. Is it a private individual?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And they have agreed to sell it to you?
Mm-hmm.
Correct.
Okay. What happens if the planning board denies the extra parking spots?
I don't think that's...
We're not sure.
Yeah, we're not sure exactly how it's going to work out. I mean, we're in front of the planning board,
mm-hmm.
so we can't predict any of that, but that we have our proposal, and that's what we've been proposing for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we're adamant that it should be able to work out because all that space that we have
right.
is extra space.
But what if they say no? What if they say, no, we're not going to give you these extra parking spots? Is that enough for you to not want to open a business there in under 40?
It's hard for us to.
Right.
We don't know what sort of ground we have to, you know, have a different proposal over.
Right.
Okay. You talked about entrance only. How many people can fit in that vestibule?
One at a time.
One at a time.
Correct.
But yet many people will be coming in simultaneously?
It should be okay. So the way we have it, two or three individuals can show up at once, but they're not really spending more than a minute or two in this vestibule here. So they're quickly showing their ID. As long as they're validated, they can move on into the waiting room, which we have plenty of space for people to queue up.
What's your estimated revenue? I mean, if you're giving the town of Franklin $300,000 a year, what's your profit margin on this, roughly?
So is the revenues are we're projecting between $4 and $5 million.
Mm-hmm. $4 or $5 million. Wow.
And sales, yeah.
A year. Wow. You didn't talk about the products that you'll be selling,
mm-hmm.
right? Can you educate us about that?
Sure.
And when you talk about a positive impact, do any of the products you sell have a positive impact? Because from everything that I read about the product, it only has a negative connotation.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I think, why many of us are concerned. We don't feel that the product is good for people.
Mm-hmm.
And you talked about like jobs and training people to work at this place. You know, that just seems abhorrent to me. Why would we want a loved one to work in a place that sells things that's not good for people?
So to answer your first question, So some of the products, right. So all the products that we have that we can sell in the dispensary, there's nothing outside of the realm of the cannabis that we're going to be selling. So this can be anywhere from flowers, cartridges, oil products, extracts, tinctures, beverages that are all associated with THC. We're going to have that to be able to be available. And in terms of positive impact, maybe there's a little confusion. I didn't mean a positive impact based on what products we sell. Positive impact meant in the terms of how can we positively impact the community
as a business.
And that's something that the CCC sort of is monitoring and making sure, because before recreational marijuana is approved, it was obviously illegal, and there have been cases where people have been having mistreated or mistrialed because of marijuana. And one of the ramifications of this is that now that it's legal, the people that were treated unpoorly because of whatever charges they were given, they were treated unfair. And so one of the things that CCC wants us to ensure is that how can we impact these people that have been essentially charged for a crime in the past, and now that it's legal, how can we help them out? So that's also a positive impact. Another positive impact is sort of teaming up with organizations of how to create sort of educational pieces on what this product is, let people know about it, where it comes from. Because generally speaking, I mean, this product exists right now, right? I mean, this product exists on the streets. We don't know where it's made from. We don't know where it comes from. However, in a dispensary, it's complete opposite. Everything is tracked. We know exactly where it's lab tested. So we're making sure that the product everybody's getting is the right product and exactly what it says it is, not from some Joe Schmo that you don't know where this product came from, you don't really track. So if there is some sort of, let's say for instance, you know, if there is some sort of outbreak where there is some sort of product that was tainted or is a little bit bad, they'll be able to track it exactly where it is, stop the production of it, and, you know, essentially redo everything that they're doing to make sure that it doesn't happen again. So in terms of positive impact, we want to be able to, as a business, create a vibe where we're able to coexist with the community and we're helping them educate of what this product is, what it does, because us as retailer, we'll have as much information on these products as possible, and then, you know, it's our duty to be able to distribute that. So,
you know, if you were coming to town and you're saying I'm opening up a natural health food store and you're selling organic produce, that'd be great. Mm-hmm. Great. Let me advertise it, tell all my friends. But you're selling a product that's detrimental to people, especially young people. And I don't know how in good conscience you can do that. How?
So,
I mean, 4 to 5 million is a heck of an incentive to do it, but it's wrong. It's wrong. And as a resident of Franklin, I definitely don't want it in my town. Definitely don't want it. There's no positive impact to the person who ingests it, none.
I have to very much disagree with that. I also live in Franklin. I was at the planning board meeting, I think July. There's a gentleman who got up to speak who was a veteran who spoke in favor of this because he was actually able to get off of opioids through, you know, places like this. He was looking forward to it. For him, I mean, that had an enormous benefit. And I mean, I don't use, I'm listening to him, so I'm just going by that. And I'd also say, if I remember right, in the 2016 referendum where this was voted on, a majority of Franklin voters said that they wanted this. You know, not this project, but, you know, they wanted legal marijuana.
Yeah, it was marginal.
I think it was like 50.6.
Yeah. It's like 9. You know, half of the town does that.
Yeah,
exactly.
And then, the majority of people who voted did vote to legalize, and the state as a whole voted to legalize. And I get, you know, like I said, I don't use. I'm a father of three. I live walking distance from here. And, you know, essentially, and what I wanted to ask you, I'm getting to my question. What I wanted to ask you, you know, I think you have experience running liquor stores, which, to my knowledge, is the it's not exactly apples to apples, but it's a 21 and over business, mm-hmm. So it's comparable in that sense. From what I see, this is a lot more secure than a liquor store is going to be. It has a lot more financial benefits. Certainly, I don't think liquor stores are subject to any of these, you know, fees and taxes,
right?
Do you have liquor stores here in town, or where do you have them?
So
well, a few of our friends.
Right. So a few of our friends own it, like family friends, and you know, we're actually this company overall is just not us. I mean, like, we are the faces of the company. We're the ones that are getting most likely running the operational. But some of our backers that are doing this, they're all small retail owners, and they own over 100 small retail places all over Massachusetts. So they're all experienced.
Do you
and
feel that's
one
a comparable,
of them,
like the liquor store to?
Correct.
It's a heavily regulated business. Yeah. You're,
right.
You know, controlling the who gets the product.
What like draws the gender? Do you want your children to use?
Right now, they're 11 and 6. I don't want them to do that.
Well.
Then they wouldn't. They wouldn't be able to. They're not a
store. Like, you know, how things get in. That's right.
But I mean, that could happen now with the liquor store too. My son's in middle school.
That's what I'm saying. He's in middle school.
And, you know, there's liquor stores right now that people could go in and buy. I mean, I would still have to watch the same thing. It's not really.
What were the recommendations of the traffic study?
Recommendations?
Yeah.
They're all noted on there, but a lot of gut of what the traffic study entailed was they went ahead and used another site that's very similar to ours to try and figure out what type of traffic that they have. And from what they had and the amount of parking spaces they have, you know, the engineering company says that we have sufficient parking spaces, we have sufficient plans to be able to have consumers of the capacity that we're proposing.
Even at like the peak hour, even if we didn't have appointments.
Right, even if we didn't have appointments.
That's how far the traffic study.
Right.
Have you gone to the peak hour?
I know, so
you can't get
but
there.
It was the engineering firm that the town hired, so it's not something I was able to influence.
Right, so that was, it was on independently without any sort of feedback from us.
I know you mentioned educational sessions and that, you know, things after the fact.
Correct.
Have you met with SAFE at all?
Yes.
Other than last week.
We have
all
not.
Of this was done thinking of all this stuff, and that's icing on the cake.
So this is an 18-month licensing process, and.
Now, but in that 18 months, have you ever met prior to last week?
So
with SAFE?
I know. Let me answer the question then.
Yeah.
So in an 18-month process, when you're working in multiple towns, like we don't even know where it's going to go with the town. Like for example, we have 6 different steps we have to take, and let's say we're on step 2, we can get denied. So it's hard for us to take, you know, step 7 and 8 without finishing first with the simpler stuff. So yeah, we didn't meet with SAFE until last week because, quite frankly, we don't go into every town and try to figure out how many nonprofits are around and what work they're doing, because it takes a lot of resources as is just to apply to local and state level. And with so much uncertainty in the marijuana business, it's hard to kind of like get, you know, nonprofit organizations hopes like that we're gonna come, we're gonna work with you. And then
I understand the whole process, mm-hmm. but you focus, you know, it's going to be education.
Right.
When
so
that's an afterthought.
No, absolutely not. So that was actually submitted prior to us meeting with them.
Right.
Because at the state level, they require you to have a positive impact on the community. So it's not like we have to meet that threshold. There was an applicant who got denied because they didn't have a good plan, and that the CCC denied.
And it's good to know there is no sort of guideline that we're abiding by saying we're doing an educational program. They say you have to do a positive impact plan, and that's it. They don't give you sort of what to do or what not to do, sort of checklist. And so it's our creativity and what we plan on doing that we've came up with that process. And, you know, we have the thought processes in place, and the way we're going to implement them are going to be coming to fruition as we sort of progress. Right now we're in the permitting phase, so our priority is to make sure that if we're even going to be able to do this business in general in any town we seek it. Once we get past that step, even let's say for instance, hypothetically speaking, we get past Franklin in terms of the planning board, we get everything approved. After that approval period, there's still another year of time before we're even operational. There is a check system by the CCC where we have to present our architectural plans to them, our security plan to them. They come, they inspect our policies and procedures, and all that process takes a year. So for us to have a little bit of time after this phase, we'll have plenty of time. And those are some of the times that we're going to utilize to sort of come up with exact details on what type of programs we're going to create, what time, who we're going to be working with, whether it's SAFE, just SAFE alone, or whether it's even someone outside of SAFE, right? We're not limiting ourselves.
So if I interpreted your comment before, where you were mentioning the 3 to 6 month window on just having appointments.
Mm-hmm.
Your big concern was, okay, Franklin decides to appoint 2 or 3 more. Mm-hmm. If Franklin didn't appoint another one, it sounds like you could exist, you know, quite a few years on appointment only.
Mm-hmm. Essentially, right.
Tell us and, yeah.
Right. So, okay. So like, in order for us to even get lifted, there is all types of things we have to prove that we're not sort of filling in these windows, like what he was saying earlier, if it's 75% or less. Plus some of the, a couple other people that weigh in on this will be Chief Lynch from the police department. He'll be able to kind of advocate and give us feedback to see whether he thinks that we should be lifted as equipment only. So it's not just a sole decision, plus it's a planning board as a whole. We'll have to decide that as well, so.
Good, thank you.
What will the educational material be like?
So, like I said, we're still working on that, and that's some of the things that we're gonna collaborate even further with SAFE as well. But it could be anywhere from opioid awareness. It could be anywhere from if there is some sort of, things out there that are people are concerned about, there will be programs or whatever the case may be that people need help on, maybe they don't need help on, or educational pieces of what the product is, what it does for you. If you're having those joint pains, what's the right type of product for you, like things of that sort. We want to be able to make sure that people who are doing it for recreational use are able to get what they need, and that people who are using it for medicinal use, they get it for what they need. And we'll be able to pinpoint to the right product for their...
Detrimental it is if you overuse the product.
Right.
If the product comes in higher THC concentrations and all those sorts of things.
Right.
And just to touch up on the other things, so it's hard for us, the policy issues, it's hard for us to address that, the state passed it, the town passed it, the town administration, they've had debates and they passed that marijuana zoning bylaw. And then, they set the guidelines. So we're just merely following the guidelines. So to sort of point us as the bad guys, and it's just not there.
It's not that, it's when the state voted, when we all voted whether or not we wanted marijuana legal. The question wasn't, do you want a retail marijuana shop in your town, right? Because I think that if we had a vote today, if we had it on the ballot this November and we asked the residents of Franklin, do you want a retail marijuana store in Franklin? I'm pretty sure they'd say no. I'm pretty sure.
I'm just going to answer, these guys have been holding up their hands for a little bit, so and then they'll get you right after.
Robert Dillard, I'm a councilor, town councilor in Franklin and on the board of directors in Franklin.
Sure.
So we do have a couple concerns. A few of our councilors definitely have a couple concerns. Mm-hmm. Also I do as one of them. You're going to get a big influence from Rhode Island, which scares me a lot. Mm-hmm. Because I don't know how your security is. How's your security going to be? Are you going to have security up there?
I'm sorry?
Security.
Yes. Yep. So there is going to be a security officer on site a lot of times, right?
And it's awful busy up there. I mean, we set that zone up there so it wouldn't be near schools and it wouldn't be near, town in the center of town. I didn't want marijuana plants hanging down from the window or anything. Mm-hmm. Chewables, I'm very concerned about. I'm very, very concerned about chewables getting into the hands of children. And I get it. I get one of your points with what's out on the streets, and as Jen and I know, what gets mixed with the marijuana that's out in the street could be fentanyl, could be a lot of stuff, and we see a lot of stuff go bad that way. So I do get your point about that. That's not a bad point. I'm not saying we could not use the money from the tax revenue, but Mike, and I do agree with you. I think if it goes on the ballot this year, I mean, I would vote no. But I'm just saying, I think the town of Franklin would vote no. But that's not, I mean, you have a business plan, you're coming out in front of us, we made that zone up there, I understand that. But it's still a long way away, and like I said, I'm concerned, we're so close to Rhode Island, they're all gonna be coming over, and then it's gonna be going back there. I know we get the tax revenue from it and everything like that, but what kind of people are we bringing back in here? That's another concern of mine. They come here, I don't know what they're gonna do. Sure. And for the people in Franklin that need it, the veteran, I understand that. That's awesome. We also have a few other people that have used it and have got off of it. So it does do some good stuff. I know people that take it for joint pains and they swear by it, other people don't. So I don't know what it is, That's some of the council's concerns,
sure.
is the impact of definitely security and definitely children.
So I think there's a couple of towns like Blackstone, for example, they're gonna have a couple of dispensaries. Then I think North Attleboro, they're proposing about 5 or 6.
Really?
And by the time we open, I'm pretty confident that within a 10-mile radius, there will be at a minimum 5 dispensaries.
Oh, see, I didn't know that, so, but yeah, that's good to know.
Just right.
Knowing, that's good to know.
Since we're trying in other towns, like we found out.
Yeah, and when we file our state application, I mean, this is all public data as well. You're allowed to go on the CCC website, which is the cannabis control website. You can look at live activity of who's receiving provisional licenses, who's getting these licenses. And us as a company, I think we're around number 390 in terms of application process. So that just gives you an idea that there's another 390 applicants before us for retail, cultivation, and whatsoever. And we did the breakdown that roughly there's around 200 and over 200 other retail sites that are in process right now. Mm-hmm. So it just gives you an idea. I mean, like by the time we launch, we're going to be number 200 probably, right? I mean, so, and not to mention, like obviously he named some towns, but there are other communities, Fall River, that are closer to Rhode Island. And you know, those guys probably have more stricter regulations of how to divert this from, not to make sure it doesn't go over state. But from Franklin, I think the surrounding neighborhood that we have in, Taunton is proposing some, Mansfield is proposing some. So I don't think that we're going to get too much of an influx, but I could be wrong. But you know, just the way that things are being set up as of, you know, things, facilities going online one by one, I don't think we'll be sort of that 30th in line that we'd have to worry about a lot of these. But we're preparing ourselves that we will be eventually, but whether we will or not, we don't know.
Well, I think there's a reason why you picked that site, though. I mean, let's face it. I mean, we couldn't have picked a better site.
It was hard to find available.
I mean, you did your homework, and you know, it doesn't matter that there's 300 front. You did your homework. You picked a great site. You know, the town voted on it, all that. Mm-hmm. My biggest concern right now is the traffic. Mm-hmm. You know, it just, you can't get through there now.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And you're not going to get through there. You know, the other concern is there's a magic number. Maybe only two of you know that, you know, what you want in that store once you're up and running. And the number, in my opinion, is going to far exceed, even if you get approval for the parking lots, okay, it's going to far exceed that. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be an absolute nightmare around here. Mm-hmm. That's my concern. Plus, whatever my thoughts are on the retail right. store, not.
Yeah, and
that's secondary.
We were thinking like maybe with, if the police chief like wants to have right turn only out of the site, so this way the left turns are avoided.
Yeah,
and make them do U turns or something.
Yeah,
and police chief just has to put on his blue lights and blow through there.
Right.
That, so, if you travel that at all,
yeah. We actually did drive by the other day
when the train came through, or so, when yeah. the train lets off.
Yeah, so there is like a good backup when the two goes into one.
Yeah,
oh yeah.
You can't get through there.
Yeah,
and I suspect the numbers that you're saying, mm-hmm. you know, at this point in time are minimalized. Mm-hmm. Okay, and they probably double or triple, which mm-hmm. you're probably open for. Mm-hmm. And it's just going to be an absolute
right. And I mean, it's also good to know. It's
so for
like,
those reasons, I hope you get declined. Nothing to do with whether I like or dislike.
Right, right.
What your business is.
Yeah. No, that's good to know. And you know, besides sort of the approval or the denial, I mean, just in general, as us businessmen, like you know, I like to kind of use the other experience that I have, and we sort of actually, you know, we're willing to adapt as things kind of proceed. I mean, right now, there's a whole notion of traffic. Maybe if it stays, we can address it. I'm pretty sure we can come up with a solution, whether it's keeping the appointments or keeping maybe a detailed officer there or parking attendants. We've taken these measurements that we will try our best effort, right?
I was hoping there was access through Forge Parkway, but yeah. You know, at least then you have a light.
Mm-hmm. In the back, yeah.
It's what's not going to happen.
What are your hours of operation?
So we are proposing 10 a.m. to 8 p.m. is what we're proposing. So
morning,
hopefully that morning traffic, we won't be concerned about ours. It's one good thing.
But the afternoon traffic.
Yes. And, yeah, sorry, yes.
you're sat in a business.
Correct.
And you don't know where it's going. You'll have peaks and valleys, okay? Mm-hmm. With all this data that you have, and let's say you do it by the hours, will the Franklin Police Department review your data and also recommend the changes that's necessary? Did you ever think about that?
So changes in terms regarding of what?
Changes, if it was so peak, you know, mm-hmm. then oh, it isn't sure. working. We have to mm-hmm. do something. Mm-hmm. Is there another party involved in looking at your data, especially the Franklin Police Department, mm-hmm. and they see, well, this might be a problem here, so we need to take some measure to actually mm-hmm. detail on that, because you're just guessing on that, but the Franklin Police Department, they're going to crime, they would know and try and cut the problem there. Have you thought about that?
Yeah, I mean, the other thing they can recommend is like just having appointment for the peak hours and rush hours, or maybe even have smaller amount of appointments. So these are different things that they can recommend.
Well, remember, it's a state road. It's a state road, right. So the mm-hmm. Franklin Police might have some input.
I mean, right, not but like they can ask us.
Right, like, yeah,
they can ask. Based on the special permit.
Someone is reviewing your data?
Yeah, so they did review the traffic data.
So
the planning board did, the engineering company did, right. Even everyone had a copy.
So even to get a right turn out of there, we're gonna have to go in front of the state. I don't think we can okay that.
Oh no, but like we can ask the consumer.
Right, to try and do as best possible to take that right only instead of the left.
Okay,
right,
so right, right. We're gonna make it. Yeah.
No, like I mean, like enforcing these things can be hard, but suggesting it and trying to tell them to do as best possible. You know, some there are consumers that we can trust, and they probably do the right thing. So,
yeah.
Okay. And then also, like for you, if you want, we can send the whole council like all the pending licenses, and like
that would be nice.
Yeah,
this way you don't have to look it up.
And, yeah, sure.
And we
yeah.
will, you know.
Yeah, and I think that you know, for us is we're very transparent. We're local guys. We're not some big company out of the state that's you know have like this big sort of ego and way we want to do business. We've always conformed to whatever town or community we go into. We like to work together. Even if the people don't know about certain things, we're there to answer questions like we are today. Mm-hmm. It's actually quite unfortunate because we had a community outreach meeting before this, which we didn't have a lot of people, and today we do. So it's actually good because you know we feel like us as a company, we only grow with feedback. We don't grow by knowing what you know what you guys are thinking without knowing.
And even
so,
before we open, we're going to have at least one more meeting.
Right. So
once
which,
we get a state provisional license, this way we'll have a lot more detailed plans as well.
Correct.
Okay. One for the general public, mm-hmm. It was 9183 to 8982, so 201 voters more for yes than no. So it's 50 to 49. But the two questions, estimated time, and obviously that's depending upon approvals and stuff, but
correct.
Your estimated time for opening?
I would say summer. Beginning of 2021, or if not, maybe the summer. And the reason why we anticipate that is because there's such a backlog in the CCC right now in terms of applicants.
Mm-hmm.
With the current statistics, they're only approving 6 or 7 a month, right? So it kind of gives you an idea of like where they're at and where 400th in line.
So
we
get
like,
through the line, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, unless they sort of hire more staff or something, but it's based on that, and there are check systems within that too as well. So I quickly went over it. So not worrying about the town, but sort of the CCC. Once we are approved, they give us what they call a provisional license, and with that provisional license, it's sort of the check system. They want to check with the community we're doing business in to make sure that we follow their local zoning ordinances, that we've gotten their approvals. They want to make sure that once they confirm that, then they move us on to the next step, which is essentially architectural design phase. They want to see our security plan. They want to see what our building is like. They want to see the exterior. They want to see all the implements they're going to do, not sort of pictures of what we plan to do, but what exactly are you going to do. And once they receive or stamp that approval, we actually get to commence a build out. And after we complete the build out, they do an inspection based on what we submitted to make sure that we have them implemented. And even beyond that, we have to have our policies and procedures in play, or in like actually written. So for anybody that's working there, oh, what's his duty? Oh, what's that person's duty? We gotta be able to identify those and have those written in our guidelines. So there's no sort of question mark of who's doing what inside where, or if you're gonna have a security officer or not. It's written. Once it's written, they're making sure that we have it there. And that's how you get a final license for the CCC.
You spent time earlier on the entrance plan.
Correct.
Can you explain a little bit about the exit plan?
Yep, so the exit should be pretty straightforward. These aren't specs that are up to sort of speed, but we can make adjustments to it as needed. But this corridor here, we are anticipating to be about 6 feet wide. And so the way it is that whoever enters from here, they'll be exiting from the same area. So there will be another exit from here, and they'll be able to exit right through the front as well.
All right, so I think you said there were two ID checks, one on the entrance and
yep.
the second one at the POS?
Yep, at the counter. So over here, they're gonna check their ID, which they can take back with them, and then they'll be waiting in the area, shop around for whatever they need to. And before they actually purchase a product, you have to make sure that the POSs work a certain way. The only way you're able to ring up is after verifying an ID, so you can't even skip that step, essentially. It's like you have to scan the ID, that's the only way the cash register actually lets you do a transaction.
Right. So then, is there any bag check? Because at the POS, you checked out, you've got your bag, but
right.
then you're going out the door.
Right.
Any bag check to make sure that anybody else in between didn't get
and,
your bag? Or
yep, so, yep, that's a great question. So, one of the things that we have is that there's no products outside on the floor. They're all empty boxes, or maybe there's like labels or something, or pictures. But I find it hard to imagine without them causing a sort of incident without, you know, like getting the products in their hands without paying for it, essentially. Everything's stored in the back, and even at the end of the day, all the products that are stored in the back are all grabbed by the employees and stored back into the vault. So there's no open items left in the floor area at all, or something left over. It's just a procedure we have to do to ensure safety, is put them all back in the storage vault. And actually even helps the product because it stays fresher longer, because we're going to have humidity control.
That, and then just the fact that we have like almost one employee to one person.
Right.
It'll be very easy if, you know, one person try to clean it up or something.
Right.
So that's how we have that waiting room.
But if you get 10 in there, you've only got six POS.
Right. So then the other four will sit in the waiting room.
Right.
I thought you implied that the 10 would come in.
Yeah, so the way I was implying, just to get an overall picture, we're going to have 6 POS stations over here. So there will be roughly 6 employees right in behind the counter. And then not to mention there's going to be roughly around 6 employees that are walking the floor area, okay. helping with consultation, helping with people if they need the product, if they have any questions or concerns. Because just the waiting room is sort of like an introductory. If you want to do your own self-education, that's great before you enter. But if you still have questions after that, you'll be able to have that one-on-one with someone. And there's going to be a capacity of what we feel of whether, you know, we're going to do one-on-one, or whether it's going to be, you know, like a ratio of 1.5 where we can have 10 customers and 5 employees in the floor area.
Okay.
So
it's going to depend, because sometimes we can have like express checkout where they pre-order. And
right. Pre-order, there's going to be, yep. So that's
so
one of the things that we have.
Have a variety.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I do operations, so I
can yep.
Are you going to have cameras outside and everything like
Correct.
That too? So in case, like you said, which brought up a good point, mm-hmm. your middle school could go down there and somebody could buy booze out of Liquor World.
Mm-hmm.
So will you have somebody monitor?
Right. So these green cameras that you see here are exterior cameras.
Okay.
They're on the depiction just to kind of show their exterior cameras, but they're going to be angled and positioned and, you know, kind of feedback from the police station as well to see if that's something that they like. If there's an angle that's missing, we can add additional camera. And not just these corners here, but the whole facility. So even though we're renting the tenant to somebody else, we're gonna have cameras on the entire property, essentially, even though we're only existing on one side of the property.
Okay.
So everything.
Can I ask a question?
Sure, yeah.
So if a parent finds their adolescent smoking marijuana or vaping marijuana or has an edible, with the seed to sale tracking, could that parent then take that product and bring it to the police, and would the police put that into some kind of network and find out where it came from or who purchased it? Or could you talk a little bit about what that process looks
so
like?
So if
sure.
we have the packaging, we can sort of even pull up reports from the day or the week. But we can't notate, you know, for example, Chirag bought the product.
Right, so...
Like, we can't just put each person's name and the... We can't save your information.
Right, we're not allowed to save...
But we will get an idea. Everyone's on camera, right? So we can sort of narrow it down. Let's say there was 20 people today who bought it, and at least, instead of looking for 100 people that you don't know, at least you can narrow it down to 20.
Right.
Okay, so the product has to be linked to the label... With the package.
It has to, right.
Yeah.
Okay, and then that's how it's tracked through the packaging, not so much through the substance.
Right, no, that's right.
Okay. The substance itself, like the flour, you can't, it's hard to...
Right. Right, okay, and I think that that's something, from a safe perspective, that's come up with a lot of parents recently, like, mm-hmm. there's tracking, how is it tracked, and I think that provides a lot of clarification.
Yeah, so the packaging itself. So every time you get it lab tested, like, there's at least 3 or 4 different items on there. One is obviously the seed to cell tracking number, then the potency number, and then like the SKU number itself, so you can scan it.
And even sometimes, depending on the manufacturer, where it was manufactured, it says it on there. Where it was lab tested, says it on there. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, obviously we can link, and if we carry the product, most likely it's sold from us, we'll be able to sort of backlog and track that out. So.
Got it.
Right.
And would we advise parents to go to the police with that, or would they call you? Like, what should our next step be in advising a parent if they find that in their household?
So, yep. So that's a good question. So, one of the things that we might have just overshot a little bit is that even with the 24/7 surveillance and all this monitoring, we have to have a third party do it as well. So we're going to have a third party vendor that essentially is helping us monitor these and checking any suspicious activities as well, besides the police station and ourselves. And that's something that we can coordinate with the camera, whether it's someone, one of our staff members that can help with that. And, you know, I think that's something, a coordination between the police and police department and us. Like I said, we met with Chief Lynch. He has our direct contact number.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've told him anytime that if they have any questions or arise, they're more than welcome to give us a call and you know.
But in terms of your question, like how to filter it through,
right?
I think once we get closer to opening,
right, we'll have a better idea.
I think that would be great, because I think that certainly over the past week and a half, that's been something that comes up. Mm-hmm. Just, you know, what does the tracking look like, and what is seed to sale, and is mm-hmm. that the substance, or is it the packaging, or the label, and who do we bring it to? And so for us to now, especially now that school has started, mm-hmm. to be able to talk to parents about what this is, mm-hmm. is so crucial. Mm-hmm. Because I think the largest concern about a dispensary in our community is for adolescent use.
Right.
And so if there is some kind of tracking system and some style of support that parents can get if they have questions, then that's great.
Right.
And I think that that's one of the reasons why we wanted to have this open discussion again tonight, mm-hmm. is to answer all these questions, especially now that things have progressed even over the past 2 months.
Mm-hmm.
And it's great to hear too that you want to have another meeting, you know, in a few months.
Yeah,
and then like I think even within the next month we can come up with a way where they like anyone in the town will have a contact info. They can contact that, you know, through them, they can reach us. And on top of that, like, we'll figure out whether we should be the first point of contact, or should the police be, or having a different organization in between.
Right.
So we're gonna have to sort that out.
Yeah.
Well,
okay.
I may interject, if I had an underage child, I would call the police, because marijuana is legal, but that older person to give it to a younger person is not legal.
It's illegal.
I agree. Call the police. And then I'm sure they would get to you.
That would be
something. Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't even hesitate.
Right.
What if a death was attributed to a product you sold?
So that's actually very important, and that's one of the reasons why every single item is lab tested. And so if there was some sort of mistake on the lab testing part that this product was still able to get through, and you know, granted, if we didn't manufacture it, it's really hard for us to kind of say that it was sort of our fault. I mean, we sold the product, and you know, so what the CCC implements is that, you know, this has happened in the past where not someone that necessarily died, but someone actually got sick off of it. So they backtracked as where it was sold from or where it was manufactured, and they made them shut down that quarantine that area until they actually get it up and operational again after a reinspection.
No, that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about not the quality of the product, but someone died due to a vaping death or a car accident or abuse of the product. I mean, what if it was tracked back to your facility?
Tract Act, as in?
As it was sold.
Once it leaves our premises, I mean, it's sort of the duty up to the consumer to make sure they do it properly. I mean, we own liquor stores. There have been, there could be an incident where somebody maybe bought something like an alcohol from us. Some youth probably got their hands on it and they got into a car accident. I mean, is that necessarily our fault? Not really, but I mean, it's more on the consumer who bought it from us and how it got there in the first place.
Piggybacking off that, I guess that brings up question. So someone at the point of sale who's not intoxicated, but maybe do you have the discretion not to serve like a bar would?
Correct. So
that was my next question.
Yep. So we're allowed to we as a business, we're allowed to refuse a sale. If we see somebody looking suspicious or we think that they're gonna do something bad with it, we are allowed to refuse a sale. And that happens even often in our liquor stores where if we've given something to somebody, they show up later on in the day and we feel like they're intoxicated, we deny them the sale because they brought a vehicle and it's our concern that they're gonna, essentially driving intoxicated again or something, so we're allowed to refuse any sales.
And even if we have suspicion that someone's coming in numerous times,
right?
Like, so the state has set a limit of 1 ounce of flour
per day.
Now, if I see someone coming in per day buying 1 ounce, there's no way that person used up that much unless they're a medical patient or something. And in that event, we can stop the sale.
Right.
We can control it ourselves. So.
To clear it up, if you see somebody, buy a bag and he goes outside, what happens if you see that person giving it to a underage person or anything like that with the kid?
So if we see it on premise, we have a security guard on, that's there to make sure that none of this happens.
Okay.
And then obviously we would apprehend them and then hold them accountable until we can pass them on to the police.
Okay.
Because it's our duty.
Ban them from the site.
Yeah, and then obviously
that's the other thing. They would ban. They couldn't come here.
Right. Right.
Do you have any tracking software that tracks it?
Tracks.
I mean, if someone came in every day, you might not be there every day. You might have different staff. They don't notice it.
The
person smart enough to come
in. Right. So let's say when someone enters a facility, the first time they're given the ID, it goes through the advanced checking system, which is the same one that the ABCC uses. And the way that works is you put the ID into a computer system. And that actually logs all the people's information. So that one actually does store the IDs of each and every one walking in. Only when we sell the product, we can't.
We can't record that, nor can we share that information with someone just because we have the
checking tool. Whereas when we're checking the IDs, we can.
But the ID checking tool is advanced enough to say that this is the 34th time of this customer coming in, and if it's only 34 days since we opened, then we know this guy's came in 34 times.
Can so people kind come of in multiple that, times during the same day?
As long as they haven't bought
more than
ounce
the
limit,
yep, then 1 ounce limit.
But can they buy different products?
So there is, it's 1 ounce of flour, and then when you compartmentalize it into the sort of the edibles and the extracts, it's 5 grams of any added weight of those. So, we can kind of figure it out, but because most of these products either exist in half grams or grams, they don't really come in like 0.66 or 0.75. It's really easy to do the math if you were to kind of add it up.
Then when we do the checkout.
And then the checkout, right.
POS will
do. Right.
Is the portion of the building that you're intending to occupy currently occupied, or is it vacant?
That portion is currently
occupied. Yeah, this portion is currently
occupied. So when you talk about creating jobs, you're displacing jobs, which may be a loss, correct?
It's a warehouse.
Basically. Yeah.
They could be warehouse workers.
Right, and we're not,
just a question.
Yeah,
right.
Question.
And just a little inside thing. So they have like a lease agreement that actually expires in the middle of the summer next year. So we don't anticipate be kicking them out or anything. I think their lease expires, and they're probably gonna move out most likely, so. It's not something that we're gonna come in and say, you guys have to leave.
Well, if you get it approved, they're gonna read the writing on the wall. And so for all intents and purposes, it's semantics, but it's occupied. So The new jobs really aren't new jobs. they're replacing existing jobs.
There's only, I think, two people that are there in terms of employees. It's like more of a storage place, but yes, I understand.
Yeah, okay. So yeah, I think we can agree to that in a sense, right?
Okay.
Apologies if I missed this before. Yes. You talked a lot about security on the inside. What does the outside look like? Are they going to be, like, as far as signage, as far as, you know, being able to look at, like, what does all that look like?
So, from the road view, we are, the good thing about us, we're already tucked in the back, but even if we weren't, there's no sort of neon signs or anything related to cannabis. No marijuana leaves. I mean, that's prohibited, and nor do we plan on doing any of that. No marketing tools or nothing of that sort. The only way you'll know we exist is if you're looking for the product and you're looking for us, essentially. So.
Thank you for your time.
Yeah, sure. Any other questions or?
Questions, comments, concerns? No.
It's just a final statement. It's a real shame that when we had it on the ballot, whether or not that people want to make marijuana legal or not, I don't think they understood that that could affect, you know, opening a dispensary, opening a retail location. I don't think, you know, unfortunately, the education was not there. The fact that it was so close in Franklin, 200 votes. If it was 200 votes the other way, we wouldn't all be here. It's, you know. So I'm very disappointed about that. I feel like there's not much I can do, although you know that I've been there and been very vocal. I think it is going to be a traffic nightmare for Franklin, but it's mostly the objection is to the product itself. I have nothing against you guys and your businessmen. If you were selling something that was, in my mind, good for people, then I would be like, yes, wonderful. But I have rarely concerns about the product itself.
So I just want to say thank you for the both of you for coming tonight.
Sure.
I'm Janite. I'm the president and co-founder of the Safe Coalition. And we found out that the dispensary was planning to go in front of the planning board about 2 weeks ago. And I had attended the planning board meeting, and we got in contact, and we had a meeting last week. And through the CCC, the guidelines are pretty specific, just as the gentlemen have explained, around what they need to do in the community and how they talk to the community. And these two gentlemen did already have their community outreach meeting. And so our big ask from the Safe Coalition, because one of the things that we really stand on is letting the community have a voice and providing education to the community. And we asked these two gentlemen if they would be willing to come back and speak to the community. And without hesitation, they said yes. And I really appreciate that you said yes, that you are being transparent. I feel like we can have real conversation and communication with you. We'll probably still talk to the community around concerns and things that they're looking to see if this business does go into effect. And I do think that we're on a really great road right now to having open dialogue and open conversation. So I do want to thank you for being here and coming out tonight and answering people's questions.
Yeah, not a problem. I mean, what better way to serve the community if we can't answer their questions, right? I mean, that's our duty. So
you said you're going to have one more meeting before you opened up.
Correct.
But if we get a lot more concerns, mm-hmm. would you be objected to coming back again? You wouldn't, you know,
for a meeting.
Right, no, but I mean if now this gets out more and we get a lot more contact.
It's going to be more publicity.
Yeah, right.
We can do more than one meeting.
Okay, it's just that's a all matter of, and I think you would. I just
yeah,
want to bring
so
that
we just
to the
want
people
to have there. A like, maybe communicate with you guys and
yeah, we'll
let us know when. Because
right.
Yes. We don't know the ins and out of Facebook. Like, I don't even use social media.
Mm-hmm.
So what goes on out there, I have no idea.
No, that's what I'm saying. So maybe we'll get.
You tell us.
All of a sudden,
Jen
and I are getting a lot more phone calls. Well, we're gonna get you back.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, yeah. That's completely fine to us.
You know?
And you know, generally speaking, I think if there was like 10 times more crowd here, it's beneficial to us, because what ends up happening is that if there's any misinformation out there, if we can be transparent enough to show what we have, that's good enough for us, and that's what we're here for. So.
This podcast is my public service effort for Franklin, but I can't do it alone. I can always use your help. How can you help? Overall, if you can use the information that you find here, please tell your friends and neighbors. If you don't like this, please let me know. Through this feedback loop, we can continue to make improvements, and I thank you for listening. For additional information, please visit franklinmatters.org. If you have questions or comments, you can reach me directly at suresteve@gmail.com. The music for the intro and exit was provided by Michael Clark and the group East of Shirley. The piece is titled Ernesto Mañana, copyright Michael Clark and Tintype Tunes in 2008, and used with their permission. I hope you enjoy.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you.
This podcast is my public service effort for Franklin, but I can't do it alone. I can always use your help. How can you help? Overall, if you can use the information that you find here, please tell your friends and neighbors. If you don't like this, please let me know. Through this feedback loop, we can continue to make improvements, and I thank you for listening. For additional information, please visit franklinmatters.org. If you have questions or comments, you can reach me directly at suresteve@gmail.com. The music for the intro and exit was provided by Michael Clark and the group East of Shirley. The piece is titled Ernesto Mañana, copyright Michael Clark and Tintype Tunes in 2008, and used with their permission. I hope you enjoy.